And welcome to From the Rookery, a podcast brought to you by The Athletic. We come every week and discuss what life is like following Watford FC. And, well, we are here to discuss a 1-0 away loss at Oakwell, where Watford let in an early goal for Barnsley and then spent another 90-odd minutes trying to get a goal back and were unsuccessful. I'm joined by Jason.
Happy blooming Halloween.
Colin.
Good morning.
And Michael.
Yes, it's a mournful mic, I'm afraid, today.
Oh, well, I thought maybe it's Sunday morning. We thought we'd give ourselves a bit of time, and I'd hope maybe a chipper mic might turn up, but he's not here. But that doesn't matter. That doesn't matter. Mike, yeah, look, we left Wickham away, not in a happy place. Just remind me, what was on the list of things that we wanted to start to address?
We just wanted to see a better all-round performance, didn't we? I think we lamented the midfield against Wickham. We lamented the link-up play to try and incorporate the strikers into the game. And we lamented the amount of chances that we created against Wickham. And I was quite hopeful. You know, I'm on a WhatsApp group with my family who are Watford supporters, and they were quite disappointed, shall I say, with how Watford have performed for last swathes of this season. And I said on Tuesday night after the Wickham game, I think we'll get a response on Saturday against Barnsley. I think Ivic has got them well drilled. I think the players will feel they've let themselves and the team down a little bit with their showing against Wickham, and that I think they'll bounce back quite positively on Saturday. Now, I must confess, I didn't see the game. I had to sort of family things meant that late changes in my agenda meant that I couldn't watch the game. But there's one thing that smacks me right between the eyes: no shots on target, and that would indicate that they haven't hit any of their targets that we set them from Tuesday. So really disappointing that they didn't manage to turn it round. It's been a disappointing week, really, hasn't it, one way or another?
Well, let's talk about the game in terms of, was there any sort of improvement? And maybe, like we say, we'll probably end up talking about the strikers and why that wasn't any better. Colin, for me, the bit that I was hoping the most for was seeing Chalobah back in the midfield with Cleverley and Kapu. Firstly, because they all begin with C, and it's not loveliness to that. But also the fact that we knew that it was Chalobah starting, but is also a second game for Kapu. That didn't quite gel, did it?
No, it didn't. it definitely didn't. There were so many errors, passing errors, and that is very frustrating, and particularly from Kapu, in fact, who had a pretty rotten first half, I have to say. There were improvements. We did play well. We played particularly well after they scored, and we played well pretty much throughout the rest of the game. But what we didn't do was play effectively enough. And it seems to me, I'll tell you what it reminded me of, John, this game that I watched yesterday. It reminded me of watching Arsenal play Stoke on a Tuesday night. And we were Arsenal and they were Stoke. If you look at our players, our team on the pitch, we had ostensibly had 11 better players than their 11. I don't believe that a single player from that team playing for Barnsley would have got into our side. That's what I took from the game. But what we tried to do was play perfect football in the way that Arsenal used to complain that whenever they went to Stoke, they got absolutely hammered physically, and there was never any space, and the space was closed down, and they defended like warriors, Stoke, against Arsenal, and they very rarely came away from the Britannia with anything. And it really felt like that. We passed the ball, we got to the front third, we couldn't find a final ball, we recycled it all the way back to Ben, we passed the ball, and it went on and on and on. Now, we didn't have any shots on target, but to be fair, we did have some chances. We had a nice header from Wilmot from a corner. We had Cleverley had a really good chance. The ball was knocked to him across the box. Very, very hard, very fast. He went for it with his right foot and he missed it. So we did create some chances. But if you're going to play or try to play this kind of form of perfect football where you try to create the perfect movement to score a goal, then you have to take your chances. And we didn't do that.
Because, interesting, Colin, you named a centre-back and a centre midfielder who had the two chances that you remember from that game.
Yeah.
But Jason, the problem we've got is, for me, it's a lightweight attack. It's felt that way. Yes, it has scored goals in Saar and Pedro. Was it just the fact that it's those two up front, they weren't taking the chances? or was it more that why we weren't able to get the ball in the back of the net?
I think it's partially down to that. And I said it the other day that you see Sarr and Pedro fitting in better into a front three with a striker in between them that can hold the ball up for them. And as Colin says, make us more effective in that final third. What I thought we did do well yesterday was up the tempo a bit better. Again, as Colin says, the passing still wasn't great. I thought, you mentioned Capu, whenever he got the ball, until he started sort of dropping deeper late in the second half.
Deeper, Jason. Deeper. He was a centre-back for a while. It was amazing.
Exactly. And because he was playing centre-back, he had no one behind him to pass to, so he had to pass forward, because for the rest of the game, he spent the majority passing backwards. And that in itself was part of the problem. We had tempo and we seemed to be moving the ball about quickly, but some of that time it was moving backwards quickly. And that's part of the problem, as well as our strikers. And then also, again, and it feels like I'm repeating myself, that the quality of crosses. Again, we've got I'm coming in with a good and a bad here. The good is, again, down the right-hand side, we looked like we could make things happen. Kiko, time and time again. Once more, getting beyond, breaking the line of the defenders. Good through balls to him that he's getting behind. He can then get crosses in. But the quality of the crosses from him yesterday weren't at the level I think that they would need to be. There was a lot of balls into the sort of near post again. But again, you can say, is that because we haven't got a proper out-and-out striker up front? Does someone like an Andre Gray, is he anticipating that? And is he getting it at the near post and getting on the end of those crosses? Whereas the majority of them, I think, were saved by the goalie. I think every cross we had, the goalie managed to pick up, because there was no one in at the near post attacking and getting on the end of them.
It's really interesting listening to you guys, having not seen the game. I've seen the Wilmot chance, and I've seen the goal, which was obviously a wonder strike to win it. But you all sound relatively positive. And if you don't mind, I'm just going to slip into John's role for a minute and ask all three of you a question that needs two answers.
I'm not feeling very positive.
Well, it sounds like there's the signs, well, you see. And I was quite positive after Tuesday, and I felt quite glum yesterday and waking up this morning after the result, because it feels like I feel like I'm slipping into the camp of my cousins and my brother and other people who have been a little bit negative about this Watford side. But I'm going to ask you, it's a word and a number that I want you both to give me. Was this performance better than Tuesday against Wickham? And what would you rate the overall performance out of 10? John, let's go with you first.
It was better than Wickham. And I would probably give it, and I'm probably going to be the highest, 7.
Jason?
I agree with John in that it was better than Tuesday night. John's also right, and he's probably going to be the highest. I think 5.5. I couldn't decide between 5 or 6. So 5.5 for me.
Cole?
Yes, a bit better, although we lost. We didn't get a point like we did on Tuesday. I'm going to give it, when you consider the fact that we're playing in the Championship, I'm giving that performance a 4.
Because I woke up this morning and feeling a bit grim, but then thinking about, well, we did lose to other teams in the, it feels bad because it's Barnsley as well, right? And they're not a glamorous side, and they've had their struggles. They've got a new manager. They dismantled QPR in the week, so there's obviously got a little bit about them. But it does feel there is something a little bit depressing about, and this is absolutely no disrespect to Barnsley, but there is something slightly depressing when you're supposed to be challenging for the top end to losing away at Oakwell. But we did lose to teams we should have beaten in the Premier League as well. So I'm trying to balance it up, and I'm quite enthused by some of the positivity that comes through. My concern is this team learning quick enough? Because, you know, last week I've been quite positive about how thick and fast the games come, because they give us opportunities to overcome the last disappointment and get better. But I just worry whether we're learning. I mean,
but Mike, are you saying, is the team learning? Are you separating those two things from the players and the manager, or are you seeing them as a one whole unit?
Well, I've been very positive about a whole unit, and I've been positive about that because I feel that Vladimir Ivic is trying to impose an identity on Watford, something that we've lacked really for a little while, haven't we? We've sort of flitted around various styles and approaches, and you can see very, very clearly what's trying to be achieved, and that is keep it tight and score a goal, basically. What we've seen is it comes unstuck if we concede, doesn't it? We don't do well if we let one in.
I think there's a really clear reason why we don't respond very well when we go behind, and it seems to me that there is a culture in the team, particularly amongst the defenders, that they want to sit deep no matter what the situation, the game situation is. And we were 1-0 behind for the whole of the second half, and yet our three centre-backs seemed to be welded to their own 18-yard line, even in the last few minutes with Kapu picking the ball up on you know, at just outside his own box. And the problem with that, I think that is a sort of subconscious thing, because the manager is very keen on defensive structure and being difficult to break down and being sort of, you know, tough in that department. What happened yesterday was that the gap between the three centre-backs and the midfield was enormous, and then the gap between our midfield and the forward line was equally as large. So for the defensive unit to change the game, to transition from defending into threatening the opposition, there's 60 or 70 yards. Now, we have seen this before with Watford, but the problem for me is that there's got to be some sort of mental thing to do with the players and their relationship with Ivic and what Ivic is telling them, because this was Barnsley, right? And there's nothing wrong with Barnsley, but they were not threatening us. They didn't really even look to threaten us. They were looking to protect that 1-0 lead. And yet, we still didn't see our back three move up to the halfway line when we had the ball to compress the play into Barnsley's half, to put more men in the box, which is the other thing we simply don't do. We don't put men in the box, which is back to my point about trying to score perfect goals, play perfect football. We don't crowd the box. And the other thing that really annoyed me about yesterday, really annoyed me, and this is something that I think has to change if we'd be successful in this league, because firstly, I don't think Ivic has really adjusted to what the Championship is, and I don't think some of the players have either, partly because, as Mike says, he's trying to impose this identity and style on our play. But they pressed the hell out of us in the first half, and they continue to do it. And they pressed us and pressed us and pressed us, which meant we had to start our play from our own goal line quite often, which is a hell of a task. We weren't able to break the press that effectively. And the other thing is that we didn't press them. And when we played in the Premier League, there were times when we pressed high up the pitch, won the ball high up the pitch, and went on to score goals. And yet, for some reason, the attitude is we sit in our half, we get the ball, we want to play nice football, we want to play it out through the lines. But the other problem with this, and this is the key tactical thing for me.
These problems are stacking up here, Carl, aren't
they? Well, they are. And that's why we lost 1-0 to Barnsley. One of the things that's interesting tactically when you watch a football team is if the defenders won't come up to join the midfield, what does that do? Well, it clearly creates space between your midfield and your defensive line. And Barnsley were able to exploit that space again and again, including their goal. The boy got the ball round about the halfway line, just inside the halfway line, in our half. He ran pretty much unassaulted. They just watched him run for about 10 or 15 yards, and then he got his shot off. Now, the problem is that the back line sits too deep, and the midfield either won't come back or the defensive line won't go up to compress the play with their own midfield. It creates space. So in fact, even if you're dropping back and you think we're being defensively strong, we've got our shape, actually what you're doing is something which works against being defensive, because you create space for the opposition between yourself and your own midfield. And it happened again and again. Barnsley had the ball in that area over and over and over again, running at our defence. Now, that is not good defensive play. That is the opposite. And they don't go up as a team. They don't come back as a team. And I think that that's something that has to change. Otherwise, we're going to find ourselves in this position week after week after week.
Jason, let's say those are your issues and you are the manager of Watford. Have you created those issues yourself because of your own thought process and what you want to happen? Or do you think this is something that he's created purely from what he's got to play with?
Well, you listen to the sound bites and you listen to what people are saying about Ivic and you think he's doing this because of what he's got. But I don't believe that it should be like that. People are talking about he's only playing three at the back. He's not playing what he would prefer, which is 4-3-3, because we haven't got a left back. We've got players that can play left back. We've got, yeah. I mean, Kiko can play left back. Kiko under Pearson when we had injury problems last year. And I'm sure there's other players that can play left back. One of our centre backs can play left back. I mean, Slav did that in the Championship. I think that's just an excuse. If we want to play 4-3-3, which I think we need to look at really now, given the issues we're getting, and then we need it's that striker in the middle. Perhaps that's the reason why we're not playing three up front. But we had Gray on the bench yesterday, sitting on the bench for more than 70 minutes.
Mm.
By the time he's come on, Barnsley are comfortably defending. They're sitting back, and we know what Gray's strengths are. It's the same problem we had, I think, in towards the end of the season last season, where substitutions were being made too late. And I think that's a problem that is definitely down to the manager. We're in a position, we're in a game where we're 1-0 down. It's not happening for us. There are, as we said, there were positive moments. There were potentials for threat. So we need to do those little things to give us the edge to change the game. And for me, one of those, and it's been statistically proven, I think I've talked about this before, if you want to affect a game with substitutions, you need to do them early. And we didn't at all. Gray comes on with less than 20 minutes to go. You're looking at him and thinking he's the man that could get on the end of those crosses. He's the man that could cause us a bit more problems up front. He's the man that could potentially, whilst he's not a Deeney or a Parisa, but he could still potentially link up Saar and Pedro. But we've waited till beyond 70 minutes. Hughes comes on with less than 10 minutes to go. That, to me, isn't a game-changing substitution. That's just go and get some minutes in your legs, lads. Exactly, the game's gone. That to me, was probably the most disappointing thing about yesterday. The fact that we had players on the bench, and I don't know if you guys were like me, you saw that bench yesterday at 2 o'clock, and I was certainly fantastic. The guys are back. And I said to you halftime, John, on WhatsApp, for Gray at least, get him on early second half. None of that happened. Opportunity to try and change the game, and we didn't take it.
What I've liked so far is the post-match talking has been quite blunt, and people have been willing to take responsibility. I thought Ben Wilmot was, you know, he fell on his sword well and truly, didn't he, yesterday in an interview, and said it was his fault and he should have taken one of his chances. But Vladimir Ivic has been quite blunt as well, I think, in a lot of his post-match words. And I've quite liked that up until a point. But listening to Colin and Jason there, it's something starting to niggle ever so slightly. I make Jason absolutely right on the left-back situation. Kiko is one of the best players at the club at the moment. I think he is the one that, when he's played, has shown he is a level above the opposition, whether it's his touch, whether it's awareness, whether it's his movement and passing. He's shown himself to be a Premier League quality in the Championship. And I think there's absolutely no question in anyone's mind that he would be a more than ample left back. He's a very, very good footballer. And if he wanted to play left back, he would play there. And the other thing is that Vladimir Ivic has sort of been quite defensive about the statements from lots of people, including me, that this is a defensive Watford side and that his MO is to be defensive. He said that's not how he wants to play. He wants to play attacking, sort of fluid flowing football. And if you listen to how Colin so eloquently described what went wrong yesterday, and that's really been a blueprint for a number of games this season, there's been no signs of that whatsoever, really. The way we break the press is to sit back. That's not, you know, the way, if that's the way you're going to do it, you're playing counter-attack football by definition. And that's fine. But as we've said all along, there's very, very fine margins on that, and you have to not concede and you have to take your chances. Well, yesterday was the opposite of that, and the net result is, it's almost an exact formula. Opposition score equals Watford loss, or Watford don't win. And so it's starting to, there's just a few little niggles creeping in. It's like, well, what we're seeing isn't really translating the words that we're hearing spoken on the pitch, if that makes sense.
I think trying to play this style of football in the Championship is a bit like standing in front of a tsunami and saying, well, I'm going to do it differently. It's like he's trying to reinvent the football that exists in this league. And, you know, we know what, if you ask anybody, what is the Championship, you know, what's the characteristics of the Championship? It's not beautiful to watch, but it is quite fun. There's a lot of energy, there's a lot of tempo, there's a lot of players that are very, very committed to their own team, to trying to affect the result. And if you're going to try and set up in the way that we're currently set up, you're trying to reinvent the wheel a little bit inside the Championship, as far as I can see. And I just don't think that's going to work. We just need a bit more gung-ho. We just need to get up the pitch in numbers, get into the box in numbers and give yourself the best chance. This speaks really, for me, to Ivic's caution, which is also back to this left-back thing. That's if he wants to play 4-3-3, as Jason rightly points out, we have a player that can play in that position, but he's cautious, doesn't want to play him. As far as the substitutions, I do think that both those players have been out for a long time, and I do think it was a question of getting minutes in their legs rather than kind of hoping that they might change the game. But with hamstring, you know, he's been out for 12 weeks with a hamstring injury, Gray. You don't want to bring him on and have him run around at full pelt for 40 minutes or 30 minutes or 25 minutes because you worry that he's going to... So I can sort of see the logic, although then why have them on the bench if they're not going to be able to bring them on early enough to affect the result? That's a question. But it all speaks to caution. There seems to be a kind of culture of caution surrounding the manager and then therefore the team, which is why the defenders are still sitting in their own half with 10 minutes to go and we're 1-0 down to a team that isn't threatening us anymore. It's all about caution, and I think we need to flip that coin to be braver, to take more risks. We can bring our Premier League players into this league and play some nice football, but we also have to play Championship football, and that means getting up the pitch, being robust, and committing men forward and taking risks and trying to score more than one goal a game.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Part of the Athletic Podcast Network. This is From the Rookery End.
Mike's surname is Parkin. He has a son called Arlo. And this is our feature, Michael Parkinson.
It gives me great pleasure to welcome once again to Michael Parkinson. It's Arlo. Arlo, how are you doing?
Disappointed.
You and the rest of us, all Watford supporters, waking up today on Sunday. Now, what day was it yesterday?
Halloween.
Did you have a good Halloween?
Yeah.
Awesome. Now, that means, of course, Halloween, 31st of October, means it's the end of the month. My question for you today, Arlo, is who is your Watford player of the month for
João
October?
João Pedro.
Oh, very quick, straight in there. João Pedro, the Brazilian wonder kid, he's starting to look good. Why is João Pedro your choice?
He scored quite a few goals, but they might not have been in October, but he just plays good overall.
Looking ahead to next month, who do you think we need to do well if it's going to be less disappointing for November?
Maybe Capu.
Yep, I think he could be a big key to Watford's hopeful success during November. Arlo, I've interrupted your homework to do this, so you get back to it. Thank you so much for joining us.
Bye-bye.
Well, I think he's just gone for the goals. I mean, yes, Pedro has scored two, and only two in October. As player of the month, only two in October. And I assumed he was going to say Foster. An outside chance, maybe it was going to be Chalobah or maybe Kiko. What do you think, Colin? Do you agree with Pedro, player of the month?
I suppose the goals he scored put him up there. I think I'd still have to go for Sarr. The cross, the touch and the cross for the Parisa goal and the shoulder, the head onto the shoulder and the little touch with his right foot before he smashed it at the keeper and then cleverly headed it in. I just think that the real quality, everything that we've seen that's been really good about us has come through Sarr. So I think I'd probably go for Sarr.
I'd go Kiko.
Lovely.
I said his crosses haven't been great, but when he's got the crosses right, we scored goals. He laid one on for Pedro, didn't he? Blackburn, the cross for Sarr against Wickham. But back to Pedro, what earns him a big plus point for me, something we didn't mention after the Wickham game. We were saying how our defenders were struggling with Akinfenwa and even scared to challenge him. I'm pretty sure at one point, Pedro's dropped deep to pick up the ball, and I think Akinfenwa's dropped deep to defend, and I think Akinfenwa's actually bounced off Pedro and fallen over. And I didn't see any of that from our defenders. That's what we needed. So that's a big, big bonus point for Pedro. And to be honest, let's give him player of the month for that.
As a father, I have to disagree with my son. It's in the rules. So just to let him know that he's not going to have it all his all way. I do agree with Pedro. I think his strength is something that has been brilliant to behold. But Ben Foster, not just for his YouTube videos, but I think his performances really have highlighted him as to being the comfortably the best goalkeeper in the championship. Ben Foster has made some incredibly smart saves. Some of them, you know, you expect your keeper to make saves, but he's made a lot, I think, this month, and he's kept us in games. Blackburn, Wickham in particular. So I would go for Ben Foster, but with honourable mention for João Pedro.
Looking on social media this week, a couple of things sort of caught my eye. Firstly, Colin, Saucy WFC, he wanted a help to settle some beef. Norman Amrabat or Jose Manuel Girardo?
Amrabat.
Definitely, clearly?
Yeah, definitely.
In terms of his contributions, but who was actually the better footballer, do you think?
Well, I don't think we saw the best of Girardo. I mean, he came in as this kind of Spanish number 10. He was going to light us up with his intricate passing and play, but we never really saw that. I don't think he got an assist or a goal in his whole time at Watford. And for a number 10 who came with such sort of laurels of this is going to be a hell of a player, the best player you've seen in a Watford shirt for years and years, it never really happened. Whereas what you got from Amrabat was exactly what you expected to get from him, which was he got his head down, he got the ball at his feet, he ran at defenders, he tried to cross the ball. He didn't probably have the footballing quality that Girardo had, but we never really saw that from Girardo, so I would definitely go for Amrabat.
We also got that amazing gift from Amrabat, albeit not in a Watford shirt, but I think he was on international duty for Algeria, voicing his, making his opinion on international duty for Morocco, making his views on VAR abundantly clear to the world. So yeah, massive tick for Amrabat. You know, Girardo scored four goals since he left Watford in the back end of 2016. And yeah, so it's whether it's we didn't get the best out of him or he's just one of those players who's never gonna really shine.
He had one good game, didn't he? I think against Villa. But whereas Amrabat was entertaining all over the pitch. I think he had Christian Fuchs on toast in one game, if I remember rightly. And then also for the thrill seekers amongst Watford fans, whenever Amrabat was defending in our own penalty area, whether he would give away a penalty or not, that was always a bit of a buzz. An entertaining all round.
The other one came up, our friend Jordan Weimer, Watford Analytics. He said earlier on, he said that Ivic's criticism was odd to him. The first time in a while we've seen a coach really instilling his philosophy on our team. It takes time, but we have an identity. The big question he said something that really raised a question for me. He said other coaches have sprayed deodorant on our problems instead of actually addressing them. The question I had, Mike, was which Watford coach was using Lynx Africa?
Oh, God, it's a good question, isn't it? Do you know what?
It's low quality.
Yeah,
it's not the best.
There's only one person for me that would stoop to using Lynx Africa, and that's Marco Silva. He's all about the outward appearance. He's not thinking about anyone getting close enough to smell him. So I think, I'll just use a bit of Lynx Africa. I've heard of that. Marco Silva and his Lynx Africa. I'm glad we got rid of him and that appalling stench. Take it back to the school disco, mate.
Tandy, who is your boy Tandy, he said Dave Bassett, and I had to correct him because historically, Lynx Africa was not on the shelves during Dave
Bassett.
If it
was, though, Harry would have been covered in it.
Oh, well, hang on. I think it's pretty apparent that Dave Bassett didn't use deodorant. He stank.
Yeah, well, maybe we would have smelled a bit sweeter if Lynx Africa had been around during Harry Bassett's time at Watford. Mike, you didn't get to go to Oakwell, but you have been before. We have talked about it before, but we've got a bit of a challenge. We want to almost complete this story that's come up a few times, your Oakwell Odyssey. Remind everyone what exactly happened many, many moons ago.
So as a schoolboy, I was in the main pretty good. 95% of the time I was a pretty good boy. But then 5% of the time I'd make slightly bizarre, baffling and upsetting choices, certainly from my parents' point of view. So it was Tuesday the 12th of April in 1994, and I sat in the back of a business studies lesson with my mate Steve Moran. Hello, if you're listening, Steve. And we just looked at each other and we thought, oh God, this is a bit boring. Watford away at Barnsley. If we leave now, he could drive, I couldn't. If we leave now, we could get to Vicarage Road in time to jump on the coach and get to Oakwell. So we thought, right, should we do it? And we just looked at each other and nodded. Didn't even tell the teacher we were going to the toilet or anything like that. Didn't even make an excuse. We just got up, walked out of the lesson, jumped into Steve's car. So this, we were at school in Amersham, and we had to get to Vicarage Road. We left it very, 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 very tight because we sort of had to pluck up the courage, basically, to walk out of school and sort of accept that we were going to go on this unsanctioned jaunt. We decided to do it, and now it was unseasonably cold. I think it was either been a bit icy or maybe even a bit snowy. But he actually, on the way there, he spanned the car. Going round a roundabout, we were going too quickly. Bear in mind, we're sort of 16 at this stage, and hadn't been driving for very long. That's why we didn't drive to Barnsley. So we spanned the car, so we had to stop and shake ourselves down from that little incident, and then go again, get to Vicarage Road in time. But that really, that used up any spare time we had. And as we got there, we realised the coach had gone. We'd missed the coach, so like, damn it. Charlie was in the ticket office at the time, the ticket office manager. Those of a certain age will remember Charlie and how helpful he was. Jimmy Gilligan came into the ticket office. He was just about to take, I think he would take the youth team up in like a minibus up to Oakwell, and they'd carry out some duties, I think. And Charlie asked him if he could give us a lift. Jimmy Gilligan was like, no. I think he muttered something about insurance, but he clearly didn't want two spotty school kids under his care for a 300-mile round trip up north on a Tuesday night, understandably so. Then the phone went because of the inclement weather. This was a chap phoning Charlie to ask if the game was on. And Charlie was like, yeah, the game's still on. And you could see his brain ticking over. He goes, oh, hang on a minute. You haven't got room in your car, have you? I've got two lads here who need a lift. And this guy went, yep, I'll come and get him. So this chap and his lad turned up at Vicarage Road, and we hopped in his car and drove to Barnsley on a Tuesday night. So two 16-year-old chaps jumped in the car with a guy we'd never known, met before, and he took us to Barnsley, whereupon we didn't have coats. I was just there in our white school shirt. I don't know if you remember when you were a kid. No one ever wanted to wear a coat, did they? It didn't matter how cold it was. So we literally turned up at Barnes. I thought, oh, my God, I'm going to have to tell my dad, mum and dad, where I am, because I obviously wasn't home. So found a phone box in Oakwell and phoned dad. And he said, I said, hi, Dad, it's Mike. And he went, you're in Barnsley, aren't you? I was like, yeah. He said, right, we'll talk when you get home. I hope they win. And he put the phone down. But yeah, and then the guy brought us back as well. And so an incredible. Watford won 1-0. So that obviously made it all worthwhile. I've blanked out the how severe the bollocking was from my parents. I can only assume it was pretty severe. I'm still not allowed out, actually.
But tinge of pride, though, in there, I suspect, from your parents as well. Tinge of pride for your, you know, adventurism.
Yeah, absolutely. But I do look back and think on, A, the kindness of this guy who stepped into the breach to take us all the way to Barnsley. Because the thought of having two spotty kids in your car all the way up to Barnsley, I think his son was there as well. Just the sheer kindness and the sheer camaraderie, the sheer willingness to reach out to fellow Watford supporters was incredible. And it's one of my biggest regrets. You know what you're like when you're 16, a bit surly, a bit quiet, a bit sort of shy. So we didn't get his name or details so we could thank him properly. I think nowadays, obviously, oh, what's your Insta, mate? I'll drop you a follow on there. We'd have connected, but because you're just not that way inclined, are you, as a kid, to sort of go through all the formalities of swapping details. So I don't know the guy's name, and I would very much like to track him down to say thank you, and to perhaps even chip in for a bit of petrol money, because to my infinite shame, we didn't even chip in for petrol. How bad is that?
It's over three hour drive, I think. Maybe 2.5 if you're on a good day to Barnsley, and you can't remember his name. So if you are that person, or you are his son, or you may even heard this story from somebody of this two annoying, oh man, yeah, I went to Barnsley once, there were two annoying kids got in the back of our car. You know, you might have heard it from the other perspective. Maybe not so much of the perfection of Mike's viewpoint of the game, of the trip. If that you are that person, can you get in touch at Watford Podcast on social media, or podcast@fromtherookerend.com? And we want to try and track down the man who got Mike and his mate Steve to Barnsley in 1994.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Thank you. from the Rookery End.
There's a few more Watford podcasts out there, not just us these days. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, who are doing them. Good luck and enjoy the party. Of course, one that has been around for several years now, in fact, it's in its 13th season, is Hornet Heaven, a place that we will all enjoy going to when our time here on Earth comes to an end. As ever, emotional and very funny. I've heard a few of the episodes that are coming up this season. Absolutely spot on. And this week, one came out, because it is Halloween, where maybe there's something going wrong with Watford on Earth, causing something very weird to happen in Hornet Heaven.
Suddenly, there was a scrunch of footsteps on gravel. Henry, Bert and Barbara turned to look. Coming towards them, slowly, was a man in torn clothes and a black Watford FC baseball cap. His shoulders were hunched. His arms were hanging at his sides. He walked with stiff, lurching steps. His dazed eyes were bloodshot. Henry laughed. Ha! Look at this fellow. He walks like Chris Awelamo runs. He's as confused and disorientated as Carl Dickinson with a football at his feet. The approaching figure came close. Suddenly he grabbed at them. Golly! And his teeth are as big as John Eustace's. Good Lord! Let's show him a clean pair of heels. Henry and Barbara hurried towards the cemetery exit, but Bert couldn't get away. The lumbering man in the Watford cap grabbed Bert by the neck. Bert fought gamely, but the man overpowered him and sank his teeth into Bert's throat as Henry and Barbara watched. Bert lay motionless. The man feasted. Henry and Barbara ran in terror. Near the cemetery gates, on the tarmac path, they saw a half-eaten corpse in a blood-stained white Watford away shirt from 2003.
Help! Henry cried. There's a zombie invasion in Hornet Heaven!
You can download those from wherever you get your podcast, same place you get this podcast, or find out more at hornetheaven.com. Now, fanzines are so important to us from the Rookery End. They were the influence for what we do. We sort of feel like we're sort of a version of a fanzine, but just in audio form. But fanzines, of course, are hard copies of little, normally A5 magazines, which you could always pick up at games. There are many out there, as well as our many podcasts for Watford FC. And I've got to chat to a few guys who are behind some of the ones that you can grab hold of at the moment. Well, that's the trouble. You can't grab hold of them at the moment. Now, we spoke about fanzines. In fact, on 100 objects, we put in a copy of Clap Your Hands, Stamp Your Feet into our Watford in 100 Objects list. And you heard the podcast early this summer. In that episode, I spoke to Dave Messenger, who is the fan liaison officer and a man who was heavily involved with fanzines in the 1990s. He also mentioned and spoke about one man in particular.
I'm sure Colin wouldn't mind me saying this, but it thrilled me actually to learn that he was getting back in the saddle and doing something like that, because probably all the people that I was involved in fanzines with, and there's a lot of people that were, you know, were great and all the rest of it, but Colin's the one whose passion for doing it and his passion for writing about Watford and producing a magazine and standing in Vicarage Road and selling it to people is just he's the person beyond all other people involved that was involved in the fanzines that stood out. And it's brilliant to see him back in the saddle and doing Watford Treasury. I think it's an enjoyable read, and it's a great angle as well, just focusing on the club's history.
Dave's talking about a man called Colin Payne. I caught up with Colin a few weeks ago, and we spoke about how he got into fanzines, how fanzines have changed both in content and how they're made. So when did he start his journey into Watford FC fanzines?
Oh, 1990 was the first sort of fanzine we did. Yeah, that was the Yellow Experience back in, it was 1991. Bit of a lonely furrow I was ploughing then. It didn't really take off, the fanzine, until the internet came into its own. It just linked up with so many people. People sort of say, oh, the internet's the death of print, but from a fanzine perspective, it just linked you in with so many people and made it so much easier. Everything about it, even just receiving articles, you could just cut and paste and just met so many people. But in the early 90s, when it was sort of people just writing in on foolscap paper articles or typing them in, and that it was hardly anyone else involved.
What did you make it on originally? What computer did you have to use?
I'll be honest, it wasn't a computer, John. It was something called a Canon StarWriter. It was a word processor, and you could read 5 lines of text at a time. You'd print it, cut it out, paste it on with sort of aerosol paste, and send it off to the printers, and they'd scan it in. So it literally was cut and paste with letter set headings, where the little transfers you had to rub over the letters to get a nice heading. It was painful.
Oh.
And it shows, if you see them, they are awful.
Yeah, but there's a certain loveliness to them, though. There's a human side to them.
Nowadays, you get a nice sort of word processing suite, like InDesign. You can move things around. Sort of, literally, it was peeling bits of paper off and repositioning them and cutting photos out of Watford Observer to be scanned in.
Why did you start, like, way back in the day, why did you start doing a fanzine then?
It was basically, it's the same story as what Dave tells when why they started Clap Your Hands, Stamp Your Feet. It was influenced by Mud, Sweat and Beers, and the whole fanzine culture had just taken off. You had When Saturday Comes, and there was another national one, Off the Ball, and it was just influenced by that, really. I used to go to Rough Trade Records in London or Sports Pages in Charing Cross Road, come back with all these sort of A4 and A5 fanzines, and I just thought, yeah, I can do that, although my sort of O-level grade B said I couldn't. But I give it a good go, and I just enjoyed it. I loved sort of standing on the street selling it, the interaction with people. And as it took off, it just became a pleasure as more people got on board.
And how long did you do first stint doing it?
Did 3 years was the first one in the 90s. And then really it sort of petered out. I started a family and I got married, started a family. And also it was such a poor mood. It was around the mid-90s. Mm. There wasn't that optimism to carry it through. It became quite miserable. And the last issues we did reflected the sort of the Grimsby game where all the fans invaded the pitch and stormed the boardroom. After that, I just thought no one really wanted to write for it at the time either. Funny enough, when the good times come back, so did we.
So yeah. When you did The Treasury, or how did that spark on? Because I know it sort of was influenced by the group on Facebook, but that's a step to go from sharing some pictures on a Facebook group to being something that's a very slick and well-produced hardback, almost. You know, I think I don't want to call it a magazine, I want to call it a periodical or something like that. It's so grand. Yeah, there's quite a step to make. What was it that made you make that step and go back into fanzine, want of a better word, writing?
Partly, and I'm not sort of picking up my part, I wanted to do write again, and that Hornet History group come up, and I was looking at, there was people posting, there was like Ollie and Jeff Wickin and guys like David Harrison, and they were posting some really interesting stuff, but also I knew they could write. These were people who had written for Look at the Stars, when that had been going years before. So although I never actually sort of knew them that well, that they were people who I knew could write. So I put a call out, really. I sort of messaged people on Facebook Messenger saying, would you be interested in doing something? But the thing was, there needed to be a catch, and perhaps I set myself the stall quite high to start with. I sort of tried to sell it them by saying this would be a high-end magazine, it wouldn't be a fanzine, it'd be something really sort of different, unique and special, because really I wanted to draw them in and tempt them. It almost set the rules, really. We couldn't then go back and say, yeah, we can produce an A5 fanzine on this, because it had been sold as we were going to do this high-end thing. Fortunately, Ollie knew Andy Barker, who does the layout, and I think that's a massive part of the success of the Watford Treasury, is how it looks. It looks really good. And once Andy sort of come on board and said, yeah, he'd like to be involved, it sort of suddenly, yeah, actually, this isn't just a pie-in-the-sky dream. This is something we can do. And as people writing, and we saw how Andy laid it out, it's like you say, it becomes something that is a bit special. And I think it's unique. I've not seen anything like it done by any other clubs.
What volume are you on now?
We're on volume 6, is coming out next month, after what will be nearly a year. So volume 6, it was all ready to come out last March, and literally it was 2 days before it's due to go to print. They suspended crowds, and we thought, we can't do this, we can't we're not going to be able to sort of cover our costs on it, and there'd be no one to actually buy it because we sell so many at games and at the Hornet shop that actually we could bring it out, but we was worried no one would see it. Then we sort of said, no, we're going to have to hold, and didn't expect it to sort of not come back, really. We was hoping it'd maybe be a month or two. But that was the last one. Number five was the last one when number six sort of queued up and ready to go.
But then you got a bit bored at home, as we all did during lockdown, and you start Home Tide. I was assuming you, like everything in life, you went, oh, we've got a couple of weeks, let's do something for a little bit of time. But then it's grown and it's even evolved even further. Originally, what do you want from Home Tide?
We'd written the Treasury. We were sitting around twiddling our thumbs. We thought we can do something, put it out online as a magazine, but not actually print it. So it started out, the first one was a sort of best of the Treasury, if you like, articles from the Treasury and articles from various other publications we've been involved in. And it just grew from there. We got to issue 2 and 3, and people were asking, you know, is it possible to get this in hard copy? So we printed 50 off and did it mail order, and that sold out quite quickly, so we had to go and print more. And it evolved from there. The one problem was we set ourselves the standard of doing it fortnightly. So we ended up over a very short time doing an actual lot of little magazines. And somehow, I like to think the standard was quite good. As this season's approached, we thought we can't keep doing this fortnightly. It's too much. And by that stage, the lockdown had eased a bit. So the name Home Tide was a bit redundant. We had a sort of chat amongst ourselves and decided that we'd bring out a regular publication monthly, and we called it Yellow, Black and Red.
And this is, how often will Yellow, Black and Red come out?
It's once a month. It'll okay. be, yeah, every month.
Yeah, because I mean, I've been getting them.
Yeah.
And we're issue 4 or 3 now? 3.
3, yes. 3. Issue 3's just come out a couple of days ago. We got it in Hornet Shop yesterday. And yeah, October's is out.
And that is a little bit different. It is the sort of you guys that I keep referring to the Treasury team, and it sort of says it's, you know, from the Watford Treasury. But it's definitely got a different feel. It's definitely a bit more. It's not all modern, but it's definitely got, it's one foot at least in the now, hasn't it?
What we wanted to do, we wanted to sort of put a bit of blue water really between YBR and the Treasury. And I think the thing with Yellow, Black and Red is it's done from a personal angle. If you imagine everything about going to a football match, and if you were to actually take the pitch out of it, that's what we're left with, really. That personal experience, what it means, the day, the tales. But nowhere in it would we sort of analyse a game or do a match report or sort of really go into football. But it's personal, I think. And I think that's the joy of it. It's sort of just a personal look at what it means to support Watford and what it entails.
What's it mean? What for you as a Watford fan, what is the thing that means to you being a Watford fan then?
At the moment, frustration.
Not a new feeling, Colin. That's been around many times over the last decades.
But I think frustration of not being there more than anything. To me, being a Watford fan, it isn't necessarily the winning and the losing. It's looking at it as something bigger. It's that being part of something. It's like I was watching the Luton game on the television and thinking, if I was there that last 10 minutes behind the rookery, we'd be sucking that ball into the net. There'd be sort of people would be the feet on the walls and roaring it on. And it's that all-immersive passion that you get from being in a football ground, I think. And that you've got the other extremes. There's other times you're sitting in your seat almost looking at the sky and looking at the words to the Elton John song, diverted, and it can be crushingly boring. But I think it's being part of something. It's hard to say. It's hard to bottle, really.
So the two things I miss, or the one thing I do miss, is a couple of the characters, let's say, around us. Where we sit in the rookery and what that, and I do think there's one bloke who's just like, in many ways, everything he says is absolute stupidity. But you know, you wonder what he's saying at this moment during a game. You wonder what another character might be shouting out at these points. But I do miss the people I sort of go with, who I only ever see them at Watford games. But the, I like to say, the judge of me of a game is Jason's girlfriend and her mum sit behind me, and there's always the first 10 minutes of a game where they're talking to each other about life and whatever, they're just catching up. But when their conversation really goes off, like in the second half, and they're really not talking and watching the game, you think, yeah, that's this is a bad game. This isn't something that's keeping their attention, because they start talking about, you know, normal things. And I suppose that even though those are things I'm missing the most. What's your favourite, yeah, favourite bit of being a Watford fan? Is your favourite time of being a Watford fan?
Oh, era.
Or even season. What's your favourite season?
82-83. It's that time I'm a bit older than you, I'm afraid, John, but I was I would have been 18. It was a time of music, and I would go to gigs. I'd go to football. At the time, I had no sort of deep relationships. I had disposable income, so I travelled all around the country. And it coincided with that wonderful time of sort of coming up, finishing runners-up, the following season going to Europe, Wembley. And just, it was an ideal time to sort of be going from a boy to a man, really. I think for a lot of people, that time's going to be your favourite era anyway at football, which just coincided with actually being probably the best two seasons in the club's history. Still very fond of it, still very fond of the players. If it was down to me, every single article of the Treasury and YBR would have articles on Nigel Callaghan, because I still think he is my favourite Watford player ever. And it still resonates, and it's still one of them things, I think, that is the bond. It will always tie me into Watford. Hopefully I'll still be here in 20, 30 years' time. But I don't know if I'll ever remember another season or era as fondly as that one, because that was special.
From the rookery end.
Colin is one of those characters, Mike, that is so important to life as a fan of any football club, to sort of put that extra effort in to create a fanzine, but also to keep going and keep going and keep going over many years of creating all the different fanzines he's been part of.
Firstly, it just shows how important football is to people, doesn't it, that Colin's willing to do that. But what a wonderful listen that was. I loved just transported, certainly talking about the early ways he had to create the fanzine, cutting it and literally cutting and pasting and that sort of labour-intensive way of creating something. But such was the commitment to getting it out there and sharing it with fellow fans. And I think that is just the very, you know, that's the essence of what being a football supporter is, isn't it? The more you put in, the more you get out. We've often said it's not just about what happens between 3 o'clock and quarter to five on a Saturday. It's so much more than that, being a Watford supporter, being a football supporter. And Colin is the absolute essence of that. And I loved hearing from it. And yeah, we're so lucky that there are people out there who have put so much effort in. There's people before Colin, people around that time as well, and continue to do it now. And it's brilliant. Absolutely. Just transported me away listening to him there. Absolutely fantastic.
So remember, it's the watfordtreasury.co.uk where you can pick up the upcoming editions of the Watford Treasury, which are just huge volumes of fantastic visual treats. But also you can get your subscription to YBR Yellow, Black and Red, the sort of slightly smaller but monthly fanzine that you may see an interview with a certain somebody on the next edition.
I do want to just say how brilliant these publications are, not just because we've just had Colin R, but on... They are beautiful and they are fascinating. They are well written. So they're just glorious. If you haven't had a chance to hold or see any of the stuff that Colin's worked on, please, please do. If you're a Watford supporter, you will not fail to find something of interest. Beautiful is the best way of describing it. And the work those guys have put in recently, absolutely phenomenal. Beautiful stuff.
There's also other Watford fanzines out there. One particular has been going for a few years, but it's slightly under different guidance now. Golden Pages. And I caught up with Tom Wicks to find out what's going on with Golden Pages.
Golden Pages started in 2015. It was David Anderson's creation. I think it was a uni project, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, he did great work to build that up from nothing, and a strong social media presence helped him with that. He was no longer able to do it, and I'd written for Golden Pages since the second edition, I believe. So with it just sitting there dormant, I thought I'd ask whether he minded if I take the reins, essentially, and bring it back to life, I guess. Yeah, so I'm 3 issues in to my editorship, just kind of trying to find interesting, engaging Watford content with the help of kind contributors, and to produce an interesting, something different for Watford fans to read. Like to have satirical pieces, something to make people smile and laugh, while also having pieces produced by people that memories, things that they want to share with other Watford fans that they may not get through the usual mediums. Yeah, trying to strike the balance. But yeah, ideally just something interesting, something different for people to look at that's engaging, hopefully funny. And yeah, it's the best way to describe it, I guess.
Now, the Deanie issue is out. Now, I subscribed today. Would that be included in my first subscription? Or anybody who subscribes now, would they get that one?
Yeah, so there's a 3-issue subscription for this season. Deanie 1 was released at the beginning of the season. So we've posted all of those out, so that'll include your copy, John. And subscribers get with each issue a postcard, which is a piece of artwork from one of the contributors. We have a few very talented artists that contribute towards Golden Pages, and this one in particular encapsulates the signing of Deanie using the money from the Elton John concert way back in the day. This issue is one I'm particularly proud of. I've got a very short interview with Troy himself in there where he covers a few bases that may not have been touched previously with his media work. And also got words from Luther Blissett, Dean Austin as well. Just really, really interesting pieces on what they think of Troy and his time at the club. It's packed full of stuff. It's got every Troy Deanie goal up until the start of the season. It's one I'm really, really proud of. The next two editions, one will be released mid-season. I don't have a date. Expect that to be in January. Then I'll have one that will be released at the end of the season and be posted to subscribers, obviously, because I won't be outside Vicarage Road for the rest of the season.
If I want to get hold of a copy, how will I get hold of one?
So our fanzines and the 2021 calendar as well are both available from our shop. I have the link on the social media accounts.
So what's the calendar? It's not what I hope it is.
the calendar, I think everyone clearly misses going to Vicarage Roads and the crowds, and it's watching Watford is far more than just watching the players that wear yellow on the pitch. I think there's something mystical and special about Vicarage Road and turning up there on a match day where you've got people flooding out of the chip shop, the pubs, going into the club shop. And what I've done is collected 12 images with a busy, bustling Vicarage Road, something that I'm sure we all miss, something which we hope to get back as soon as possible in a safe way, of course. It's something to help the woes, I guess, of Watford fans that are reduced to watching the games on the sofa.
It's great that Tom is working on Golden Pages, and these are obviously really, really difficult times. And it's, you know, we've got podcasts, there's plenty of podcasts at the moment for people to listen to, and there's these fanzines and magazines trying to keep Watford supporters connected to the club. And I think it's probably more important than we perhaps realise at the moment. You know, the landscape is changing once again in this country when it comes to the pandemic, and there's no real sign of supporters being allowed back into to clubs in the Football League at the moment. And I think it's very, very difficult. I think that people are feeling distanced from football, and I think it's obviously having quite a big effect on people's experience as a supporter. And I think it might be leading to people being slightly more critical because they're not getting that hour before the game with their mates. They're not getting the hour and a half of chanting and singing and shouting abuse at the ref and taking the mick out of the opposition, pointing at the opposition fans, getting all that out there and then having your hour with your mates afterwards. Because that's what football is. And without that, all you see is either the match or a match report or the stats or the result, and it's one dimensional compared to the three dimensional experience that we all love so much. And whilst the great work that Tom does with Golden Pages, the superb work that Colin and his team do with all their various periodicals and magazines is great, and the work we all do in the podcast, it helps. But there is such a big chunk missing, and I think that's really, you can see it in the tone, I think, of people and how they're responding to results and matches. It's easy to be critical because there isn't that link, there isn't a connection, because we're not there to see them trying, fighting, tackling for the name of the shirt and for the name of Watford. And I think it's really difficult at the moment. And so, yeah, the fanzines and the and that sort of stuff are so important. But I think it's important for us to realise just how difficult it is as a football supporter at the moment, and how perhaps we need to stick with it and cut them a little bit more slack on the pitch. They're doing their best, and the bottom line is we're not there to see it, which makes it that little bit harder, doesn't it?
From the Rookery End, a podcast about life following Watford FC.
Back home for a game against Stoke City. It's going to be a cold game against Stoke, but not at Stoke for Watford this Wednesday. We're hoping for goals, 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 Colin.
Well, it'd be nice to see us try and score some goals.
No,
I don't
that.
Mean that. I just mean I'd love to see us just be a bit more committed in our attacking play, to take more risks, to push more players up the pitch, to try and dominate the opposition. We've got the talent. We've definitely got the ability to do that. We just need to dial down the caution and dial up the ambition and aggressiveness in our play, and then I think we'll be fine.
Jason, who's going to be the player of the game? Who's going to start the November player of the season run?
Kiko's going to get his crown back from Pedro, the one that he should have won in October. He's going to start November in a positive vein. He's going to start putting some decent crosses in when he gets into those good positions. And whoever's up front is going to get on the end. And we're going to turn Stoke over. I said with this run of games before the international break, I thought we had an opportunity to pick up points. Stoke is probably the hardest game out of that. So yeah. I think it will bring a different challenge. I may be making a big mistake. I was looking forward to Wickham. I was looking forward to Barnsley. That obviously didn't turn out well. I'm now looking forward to Stoke. Come on, boys, let's do it.
I've been quite positive in the last couple of podcasts. I don't know whether it's because it's a Sunday morning. I've only had one cup of tea, but this is looking like a massive challenge all of a sudden. And it feels like a big game now, because it's been a tough week. We should have beaten Bournemouth. We conceded late, poor performance against Wickham, and then no shots on target against Barnsley. They're the headlines. Late equaliser, poor performance, no shots on target. That's the week in Watford. It's not great, is it? And now we've got a Stoke side which is still full of very, very experienced, very, very decent players. I think they might be a decent shout for the playoffs this season, and it's probably the team we'd like to play the least at this stage in the season. But you know, these are the games you get in the Championship. Every team has quality, but Stoke look like a real, real big challenge. So we're now running out of wiggle room for Watford to step up. We've sort of blown this week, really. 2 points from nine isn't promotion form, is it? And there's nowhere left to hide, so they're going to have to step up at a strange kickoff time, of course, on Wednesday, 7 o'clock. So we'll see how that goes, but it's looking like a tough game. Pessimistic Mike is back, ladies and gentlemen. It's good to be here,
and it's good to be a Watford fan, sort of.
Come on, you horns!